I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
A guy that you can never get enough of. He is Paul Brettel with the Wisconsin State Journal, Packers beat writer. Joins us now on the guest hotline powered by Gruber Law. One call, that's all. Paul, thanks for coming on, my friend.
Hey, Sparky. Thanks for having me.
Oh, boy. You sound like you're in a bathroom. Where are you at in correspondence to Lambeau Field? Are you in an office?
I am in Lambeau Field, and I'm in an office.
That's good. As long as
Lambeau Field.
Yeah, I just didn't want to talk to you. Yeah, I didn't want you on the toilet. It would just made it weird. Okay, so let's get into a couple of things. Number one, it appears the news of the day, and maybe I missed some stuff, so if so, you can correct me, is Tucker Kraft talking about potentially being back by week one?
Yeah, he seems pretty confident in that. I mean, from a workload standpoint right now, he said, I asked him kind of where he's at in his recovery and his confidence within his knee, and he said he's got complete confidence in it. He said he hit 21.5 miles per hour.
Wow.
During workout, which is in the vicinity of where he was before his injury. His focus right now is on building his cardio back up, continuing to strengthen that right leg, you know, getting back to the fundamentals, techniques of playing the tight end position. And it sounds like he's likely going to start training camp in July on the physically unable to perform list. But it sounds like his expectation is that he's going to be off that list early enough in training camp. Again, didn't say whether that's a week in, 2 weeks in, but he feels he's going to have enough ramp up time during that training camp period to be where he needs to be for week one in Minnesota, to where he can not only go out there and play, but he doesn't think he needs to be on a pitch count at all either.
With everything going on around Josh Jacobs, how has that whole atmosphere been? Because I saw he was out there with the starters today and out and participating in mini camp. The initial part of it with you guys, I would assume is kind of behind you, but I would think it's still in the back of everybody's head.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, you know, the team's navigating, and, you know, from our perspective on the practice field, right, everything in that sense, right, in that capacity seems to be operating as normal. You know, Josh is going through the individual drills. He's taking the reps with the starting offense just as you'd expect. So, you know, that's what we've seen from our vantage point.
Let's talk about some of the other pieces to this puzzle. Jordan Love apparently made a hell of a throw to Jaden Reed, rolling left, throwing across his body to the right side for a big score. How did Love look today besides that?
Yeah, it was a really, really impressive play. Like you said, rolled out to his right and then turned back in a split second, connected with Reed, who has had a step or two on Carrington Valentine down that right sideline. And I think throughout this, you know, this is a fourth practice that we've been able to see during OTAs in these two mini camps. And he's looked very comfortable, very efficient. And in talking with him yesterday, you know, one of the areas that Love said where he's seen improvement this offseason is in his footwork within the pocket. Operate where his eyes and feet are connected, right? As he's going through his reads with his eyes, his feet are following him, being able to help him operate within the timing and the rhythm of the play. And I asked Matt LaFleur today about Love's comments in that regard and on his footwork. And LaFleur, and he's talked about this before, but for the quarterback position, the accuracy of it all begins with the footwork. It's your foundation. And that ability to be in a rhythm and, like they said, operate within the timing and the rhythm of the play so the ball comes out on time, it sets the base for the rest of your body, your legs, to your upper body, to your arms, that throwing motion. So a really critical element, and that's been a point of emphasis for Love. And, again, you know, from an efficiency standpoint during these practices that we've seen, very calm, very confident in the pocket and delivering a strong ball with that.
The other part about this, obviously, is Christian Watson with the new deal, Jaden Reed with a new deal. Are we expecting a different distribution rate within this offense this year with Dobbs and Wicks gone and an unproven guy, I guess, like in Matthew Golden? We talked about this yesterday a little bit as far as, do they finally get to the point where they trust Christian Watson to treat him like Jordy Nelson or treat him like Devonta Adams, where his targets go up and are, you know, he's treated like a true number one wide receiver finally?
I think so. I think that's the way this is trending. One, the reason you mentioned, right, there's less wide receivers, right, to get the ball to. And I also think it's just where Watson is at in his ascension, right? Coming off that ACL injury, I mean, from a touchdown, yards per catch during that 10-11 games that he played last season, I mean, he was among the better receivers in football during that stretch. And again, there's just so much flexibility that he adds to this offense. We see the big plays, but LaFleur raves about his versatility, how he can play each of the wide receiver positions. He's someone who can attack each level of the field and do so in a variety of ways. Matt LaFleur is also very complimentary of his run blocking ability. And when you have kind of that well-rounded skill set, which I believe Watson's developed into, for Matt LaFleur, from a game planning standpoint, like I said, there's a lot of flexibility because there's a lot of different ways you can move him around, ways that you can put him in a position to attack an opponent. And because of that, coupled with his size, his speed, there's a gravity of Christian Watson, right? Defensive coordinators, as they're game planning, they know where Christian Watson is on the field. Defenders know where he is. And that can help open up opportunities for others, whether it's on underneath routes. I think there's even a benefit to the run game that can come from him being on the field consistently with less defenders being near the line of scrimmage. So his impact's all encompassing. And I think the Packers are looking to lean into that this season, again, along with Golden and Reed having their carved out roles as well.
Another person that I've seen mentioned amongst social media people from the Packers beat writers like yourself, Brandon Cisse, running around out there in shorts today. How did he look, the Packers' number one pick?
Yeah, he's been getting some steady opportunities with the starting defense. Not surprising, right? When the first team defense has been out there in the practices that we've been at, it's Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Valentine outside. Again, they're experienced players. Cisse's coming in as a rookie, but during these last two practices, he's been getting some more reps with that starting defense. And something I thought was really interesting that Jordan Love mentioned, and this was last week, he talked about this, but
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
This time of the year, it's an opportunity for Love to not only test his receivers, right, give Savion Williams, Matthew Golden, right, some younger players some opportunities and some of the key drills that they're doing, but it's an opportunity for Love to test Cisse, right, throw in his direction on some of those kind of critical down and distance scenarios that they're going through, just to see how he responds in that situation. And if he doesn't come up with the play, that's a great learning opportunity for him, an opportunity to go through those hurdles at this time of the year to hopefully help him be better prepared for when the regular season comes. But I also talked to Cisse today, says he feels very comfortable about where he's at with Jonathan Gannon's scheme and what he's tasked with up to this point, learning the playbook. And again, we're starting to see him get some of those more opportunities with the ones.
Speaking of Gannon's scheme, talking with Paul Bradle, Packers beat writer, Wisconsin State Journal, ESPN Lacrosse here on Wisconsin Sports Daily. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer with you. Speaking of Gannon's scheme itself, again, you're not in pads yet, so long ways to go before we really know anything, I guess. But any differences as far as what you're seeing right now, as far as Gannon's communication with his guys or how they're lining up and so forth?
Yeah, first off, I'll say Gannon, a ton of energy on the sidelines. I mean, you can see him jumping up and down when the defense does something good. You can hear him very vocal. But from just what we're seeing right now, and I wrote about this after the first OTA practice because it just jumped out to me after that first day, the movement along the defensive line unit is staggering. Like, there is so much of it. We're seeing five-man fronts. We're seeing four-man fronts. We're seeing different formations where sometimes it's Lucas Van Ness, sometimes it's Dennis Sutton, sometimes it's Baron Sorrell taking inside snaps at defensive end, simulated pressures, right, where a defensive lineman might drop into coverage while a linebacker blitzes. I mean, there is just a lot going on up there to throw different looks at the offensive line to create some visual chaos for the offense, and also to help create some advantageous matchups for your defensive linemen to take advantage of. And what we've seen over the years, Gannon's time in Arizona, his time in Philadelphia as a defensive coordinator, we've seen a lot of defensive linemen have some highly productive seasons with him. And we talked to Javon Hargrave about that, who was with Gannon in Philadelphia. And he said that this scheme creates a lot of one-on-one opportunities. And then if the defender can go out and win those matchups, the opportunity for steady production is going to be there. And so that's putting these players in advantageous situations. But the amount of movement that we see among that group, not only in the rotation, right, the number of players getting snaps, but where they're lined up, how they're being moved around. I mean, it is very eye-popping, and you can tell if that's already a big part in this time of the offseason when things are being implemented, you know that's going to be a focal point for how this group operates in season.
How should I ask this question? I don't want to ask is it fair, but I will. Is it fair to assume that Gannon will use Edgerrin Cooper maybe in different ways than maybe Jeff Hafley did to get more out of him?
Yeah, I think that is going to be a part of the equation, right? Like if I'm Jonathan Gannon and I look at this defense, and the three things on my to-do list are, how do I maximize Micah Parsons, yep, Edgerrin Cooper, and Xavier McKinney? Like those are the top three items, right? And I think in part, Cooper's season, right? He didn't have necessarily the splash plays that we saw his rookie year. I do think a product of that is just because you're playing with Micah Parsons for a lot of it. And so I think there was less that was asked of Cooper in terms of, you know, coverage responsibilities or filling gaps, things of that nature. But I also think this season, Gannon's defense won, but I think pairing him with Zaire Franklin, I think those are two really, really good complementary skill sets. And Franklin even talked about this last week, that what he does well, what Cooper does well, marry very well together. You know, Franklin is more, he's going to be at his best operating closer to the line of scrimmage, right? He's a thumper, filling lanes in the running game, blitzing, getting after the quarterback. And I think when you have kind of that stable presence around the line of scrimmage in the middle of the field, now if you're Jonathan Gannon, you're looking at how do you maximize Edgerrin Cooper, because you have Franklin in the middle, now that gives you the flexibility to do different things with Edgerrin Cooper to maximize, right, that coverage ability, that sideline-to-sideline speed, and just the overall impact he can have.
Paul, I want to go back one last question. I want to go back to the offensive side of the ball, because at the end of last year, at the end of the season, LaFleur talked about like going back down to the nuts and bolts of his offense and kind of analyzing everything and kind of rebuilding this thing from the ground up with the coaches that he has on the offensive side of the ball and come back with maybe something that looks a little bit different than we saw last year. Can you tell any differences? I mean, it sounds like they're using Savion Williams the same way they did last year, so it doesn't sound like anything's different there. Have you seen anything that's like, okay, that's a little bit different than we saw last year?
Overall, I wouldn't say there's anything that stands out to me. I do think that, and this is something LaFleur already did, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see an uptick this season of two tight end sets. I mean, even without Tucker Kraft, you know, we're seeing a lot of Josh Wiley and Luke Musgrave, or Luke Musgrave was out today, so it was Wiley and Messiah Swinson. And I think overall in the NFL, there's a trend. The trend offensively is going in that direction because it is a good way to combat the cover two heavy defenses, which is what a lot of teams run nowadays, because now you're forcing the opponent to either get big with you and match your personnel. And then in that instance, you have some athletic tight ends who can hopefully make plays in the passing game. Or if they don't match your personnel, well, now you have the size advantage, right? And that can help you out in the run game. So that's something that has stood out to me. But I haven't seen anything, you know, eye-popping at this point. And we've even asked LaFleur, you know, further comments about that statement that he made that you referenced. And, of course, he hasn't gotten into specifics, but me personally, and again, I haven't seen this take place on the football field, but one way I could see that manifesting this season is we saw a shift last year, especially, but even late in 2024 with Josh Jacobs and more of a gap-heavy running scheme, right, going between the tackles, and in part because that's where Josh Jacobs is at his best. That's where he's most comfortable. But before that, when it was an Aaron Jones backfield and just how Matt LaFleur wants to operate, he likes that outside zone, right? He likes getting the offense alignment on the move in space, then letting the running back move with them and then kind of pick the run, choose to slash through the running lane yep. as it appears. So that would be the one thing that I'm looking for where, based on LaFleur's comments, where maybe they get back to more of that, because the run game last season, and to me this is more about the offensive line than the running backs, but it wasn't good enough. Like, if this offense is going to reach its ceiling, the offensive line has to be a lot better in the run game. So it wouldn't surprise me if they're looking for ways to accomplish that.
He is Paul Breidel, Packers beat writer, Wisconsin State Journal. Covers the Packers for ESPN Lacrosse as well. Follow him on X at @Paul_Breidel. Paul, thanks so much for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sparky. Take care.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.